The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1 with All Care Pharmacy. Expert advice to keep the whole family healthy at All Care, the largest Irish-owned pharmacy brand.
Good afternoon, it's Catherine here until 4:30 today. Hope all is good with you. We have a busy show today. I'm looking forward very much to chatting to Tanya Turner, who's a cancer survivor from Wexford, and she is on a mission for a new prosthetic leg. We'll also be talking the good, the bad and the ugly of Tinder. I reckon there has been more success stories of late. I don't know whether I'm hearing more of them of late from the dating app. If you're one of them, let me know, 51551 or ray@rte.ie, because I think it does get a fairly bad rap. And you know what? If you're also allergic and you've given up all hope having had the worst dates, come on, feel free to vent. We've got some fab live music from Shebale too. So as I said, 51551 or ray@rte.ie to get in touch. I want to throw this question out to you. When was the last time you were in your local butchers or greengrocers? Because the amount of children who've never been to either, I thought was pretty staggering, actually. One third of children aged between 5 and 11 have never visited a butcher's, with nearly a quarter never having been to a greengrocer's. And it's funny, isn't it? Even those words, greengrocers, you don't really hear them anymore. They're not part of our vocabulary. They've sort of disappeared. I say fruit and veg shops. And I don't think you see as many of them as you do butchers. So look, it's, I suppose, a reminder that it's the changing landscape of our towns and how we shop, and we're all shopping online. I love going to the supermarket for the weekly shop. I don't really shop online. When I was pregnant and the first couple of months after having Ellie, online shopping for me was a godsend. But I know some people hate it, but I actually find doing the weekly shop at the supermarket and pushing the trolley up and down, I find it quite therapeutic. I do have a great local butcher as well, it has to be said. And I do think you get better value for money still in your local butchers. So let me know what you think. 51551 or ray@rte.ie, because we do hear constantly that children don't even know where their meat is coming from. And I remember being, you know, 7 or 8 and going down to Brennan's Butchers in Carlow with my mom. And you were never in any doubt, because even the very front window, they had a huge big front window. And in the window back in the day, there would be all the carcasses hanging up. There would be the pig's heads. And then you'd go in, sawdust all over the floor, and they'd have the sheepskin rugs in up behind the counter. And then there was right down the very end of the shop was where all the chickens would be hanging, and the pheasant and all sorts of bits and pieces. So you were never in any doubt as to where your meat was coming from when it was put up on the table in front of you. But let me know your thoughts on that. 51551 or ray@rte.ie. And I suppose there will come a time where we'll be talking about supermarkets being a thing of the past as everything moves online. We're always reading about the next big health trend, aren't we? Especially all these juices and health shots. Like, we had the wheatgrass shots, and then everyone was drinking fermented goat's milk for a while. Turmeric lattes, they're still on the rise. And I actually dusted off the NutriBullet yesterday. I go through phases of juicing, but I do it more so when the sun shines. Anyway, there's a new trend taking New York by storm: the chickpea shake. I kid you not. Now, I do love my hummus, I have to say. Do I want to drink it out of a straw? Not sure. But chickpeas and bananas, apparently that's the combo that the Americans are drinking. It's the new health trend. And of course, that started a conversation with us upstairs. Not about health trends. It ended up just turning into this weird conversation about weird food combinations that we love. And I admitted that my guilty pleasure was ginger nut biscuits with cheddar cheese. Delicious. If you haven't tried it, give it a go. Honestly, it's amazing. And then, of course, the real Irish one, Tato crisps with chocolate combo that people love. And I never got that. But Lisa Marie takes it to a whole new level with her concoction. So she gets the bag of popcorn, and she was very specific in how she describes this. So she opens the bag of popcorn, and then, like, she crunches up into tiny pieces the Tato cheese and onion crisps, pours that in on top of the popcorn, and then gets a Cadbury's flake. It has to be a flake. And she crumbles it up until it's just one big mess, and then starts scooping it out of the bag. Then Neil admitted that he dips his toast into his porridge, which he seemed slightly ashamed admitting, but I reckon there was a hint more pride than shame in the admission. But then Jen trumped us all. It was like game over. It was drop the mic. She pours her McDonald's ice cream sundae in on top of her chips. There you go. Each to their own. Let me know your favourite weird food combination. 51551 or ray@rte.ie. Somebody is texting here. Catherine, don't forget the fishmongers. Always a hit with the kids, says Diane in Ballycotton Seafood. Yeah, that was fishmongers as well. It was always like on the weekly way around the town, you'd stop into the fishmongers as well. I am from Laois, Carlow, and my mum used to buy all our meat in Brennan's in Carlow. Great memories. There you go. The best things in life are furry. That's according to the Irish Daily Star today. 45% of pet owners have admitted to confiding their deepest secrets to their pets before anyone else. And you know what? I actually smiled when I read this because it reminded me of Sean Daly, the brilliant Sean Daly. He was a leader on Operation Transformation a few years ago, and he was just brilliant. He worked in Specsavers. And he basically told his dog before anybody else that he was gay. He came out to his dog and it made perfect sense, even though, you know, you might laugh or you might smile when you're told that. But when you actually say something out loud that you have been hiding for so long and you say it to something or someone who's been in your life that you know is never going to judge you and is never going to shop you out with your secret. And it really reminded me of him today. So are there things you've said out loud to your pet that you couldn't admit to anybody else? Let me know. 51551 or ray@rte.ie. Now, on a more serious note, everybody, of course, is talking about creches after the RTE Investigates programme into the hide and seek chain of creches, which was broadcast last week. And the focus seems to have shifted towards the issue of CCTV and should CCTV be installed in all creches? Because you'd imagine it's an easy solution and it would stop the awful, you know, treatment that we saw in the documentary. It would kind of just get rid of that completely if there was obligatory and compulsory CCTV cameras installed. But, you know, there are two sides to this. On the one hand, would I like to check up on my child in creche? Yes, I would. Would it put my mind at ease? Probably. Would it make me feel a little less guilty being in work if I could check in and have a little look at them? Absolutely. But I do think there's another side with where privacy is concerned, relating to the children themselves, because if you are on a feed and you're looking at your child, which makes you smile and you know they're fine, you're also looking at other people's children as well. So there's that issue. But then there's the staff working in the creches as well, most of whom work extremely hard and don't need to be monitored. And there's been various viewpoints on this all day. Early Childhood Ireland Director of Policy and Advocacy, Frances Byrne, she had this to say on Morning Ireland earlier.
What we're trying to achieve through the delivery of quality care and education for babies and children is centred around trust, and relationships are key to that. And it doesn't bode well for trust, and it's not a good signal of trust. We don't have CCTV cameras in classrooms, in schools. That said, we can understand why parents would be feeling, I really need to have the reassurance of it.
And here is one of those parents. This was this morning on Today with Miriam, father of two children who attended a creche in Artane in Dublin, who does have CCTV, and he explained how it works.
When you're drawing, you obviously have to give permission that they can that they're using the CCTV. You're given a secure login. You can log in anytime you want into any of the rooms or the garden where they play, and you can log, essentially see them play throughout the whole day. Kind of gives you that peace of mind.
So what do you think? I mean, I'm really in two minds about it. As a parent, would you be comforted by the idea of having cameras watching your child while he or she is at creche? Or do you work in a creche? I'd love to hear from you. And do you feel that this is a breach of your privacy? ray@rte.ie, or you can text me into 51551. This is a great artist. I love this tune. This is Ingrid Michaelson. It's a really cool summery song. That is Ingrid Michaelson. Catherine, I met my husband through Tinder. My friend put Tinder on my phone and she struck up a conversation with him. I met him and we were married 2 years later. We just had our first little baby. What's for you won't pass you by. There you go. The fishmongers, Catherine, we have the best little fish shop with two very friendly fishmongers in Foxford in Mayo. Very difficult for guys like these to keep going when faced with competition from large supermarkets. That comes in from Anne. And then we were talking about weird food combinations that people like. I think nothing of sitting down with fried egg, raw black pudding, raw white pudding and raw sausage. What? Oh my God. A sandwich of green banana and cheddar cheese with a cup of tea. Absolutely delicious. My dad was a great food inventor. I still love grilled banana minus the skin, wrapped in slices of ham with cheese sauce on top. Sweet and savoury, comes in from Ian and Bray. Yeah, I like a cooked banana. My dad does great barbecued banana. I think I've said that before. And he barbecued banana with a lashing of brandy and ice cream. That's our dessert in the summertime. A friend of mine from Cork used to put ketchup on his cornflakes. There you go. That's an interesting one. I went to a butcher's shop as a child of 10. I saw a pig's head and it suddenly dawned on me that animals had to be killed for meat. I never ate meat from that day to now. And years later, I'm still a vegetarian. That comes in from Jenny. I mean, yeah, and you've heard stories like that so many times because they were so visual in the shops. And I don't know, do butchers still hang that amount of meat, and are they as graphic, shall we say? I think a lot of them are not, you know, they don't have the windows and the displays. I think all of that is kept in the room at the back. We spent our summer holidays, Catherine, with three kids in Kilkee, County Clare, and the one thing they all couldn't wait for were slurry chips. This is chips with curry sauce and coleslaw in Frankie's Chipper. They still love them and their parents now themselves. And that comes in from Gay Bray. Home, Gay Bray, there's a great name. Gay Bray. Home on Friday with the Chinese, pour a cold Guinness, let it settle, then dip the chicken balls in the Guinness instead of the curry sauce. Absolutely lovely. Now, Daryl, is that by accident or is that on purpose? Anyway, keep them coming in. 51551 or ray@rte.ie. The ISPCA is urging animal lovers to consider adopting a cat or kitten as it has been inundated with rescue felines. And I'm glad to talk to Hugh O'Toole now from Longford, the Longford ISPCA, because, Hugh, good afternoon. I always think we give a lot of airtime to dogs, and sometimes I don't think our little cat friends get the same attention. How are you doing this afternoon?
Yeah, thank you very much for having me, Catherine. So, yeah, it's a good point. There is a massive focus on dog rehoming, and it is obviously very important. But at this time of year, all animal rescue charities around the country that deal with cats are inundated with cats and kittens, no more than ourselves. And we were glad to launch a bit of an appeal there, looking for homes for cats and kittens.
Okay, so how many cats and kittens are you looking after, say, just specifically in Longford, in the centre there?
Specifically in Longford, we have 68 looking for homes at the minute. Now, some of those are still undergoing treatment and won't be ready for rehoming yet, or are very young. But we've got 50 of those are in our main category and looking for homes immediately.
Okay. And when you see that, say they're going for treatment, like what sort of treatment do they go through?
Well, the ISPCA specifically deals with cruelty and neglect, and with the cases with a lot of these kittens are neglect. At that young age, kittens in particular are very susceptible to eye infections, and this can just cause oozing from the eyes, but left untreated, it can cause them to, obviously great discomfort, but it can actually cause them to lose their eyes. A lot of these kittens are suffering from cat flu as well, and some of the things like ringworm, just persistent nasty infections. So we deal with all that.
All of that.
Get them healthy, yeah.
Okay.
Get them their vaccinations, worming, fleeing, that kind of thing.
And do we have a big problem with the overpopulation of cats?
There does seem to be, especially in some localised area, issues with cats, feral cats, and then just cats that are, as you say, semi-feral, where people are feeding them in housing estates and whatnot, but they're not actually neutered. And then naturally, overpopulation, these cats run into issues, and it is they get poor neglect, unfortunately.
So when they come into you, when a cat or a kitten is handed in, you go through all of the treatment, and do you neuter the kittens as well then?
Well, all cats over 6 months are neutered before they leave the centre.
Yeah.
But if people adopt a kitten from us, we do ask for a donation of €60 for each cat to help with some of the costs we incur. And that includes neutering at 6 months when the animal is ready to be neutered. And we try and do it as conveniently as possible for the adopter. They don't have to bring the cat back to the centre. They can just get them neutered with their local vet and send the invoice on in.
Okay, that's a good service. So are you open to visitors coming in to see that they're the animals and who they might like to bring home?
Absolutely. Most of our cats and kittens available for adoption can be seen online at ispca.ie. But we're open to the public from 11:30 until 4, Wednesday through Sunday. And we encourage anyone who likes to come up to make the trip. It's just drop in. There's no need for an appointment in those hours. And you can look and meet some of the cats and kittens who are looking for a home.
Oh. And are you looking after lots of other different animals as well, I'd imagine?
Absolutely. I mean, on site at this centre alone, we have 63 dogs and puppies as well at the moment. And likewise, some are in isolation for various issues. But 33 of those are looking for homes immediately. And we've got 23 horses and donkeys here at the centre as well.
Wow. Okay. So if any of our listeners are interested in adopting a cat or a kitten specifically, but a donkey or a dog, how do they go about it?
It's very easy. We often encourage people, especially if they're not living close to the centre, to pop online to ispca.ie. There's a rehoming section there where they can see all the animals. And there's application forms they can fill out. And there's also contact number for the centre here if they need any more information. And normally, not once people pick their choose their animal, they come up and meet them first and make sure it is the right match for the family. It's important with dogs, horses and cats to make sure it's not just the picture you're picking, it's right for you.
Absolutely.
And if people are happy, then they take them home and start a new life.
Brilliant. Okay, Hugh. Well, listen, thanks very much. We'll put all the information on our site as well. And that was Hugh O'Toole from the Longford ISPCA Centre. We'll take a quick break.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Keep your texts coming in to 51551 and your emails to ray@rte.ie. I'm joined in studio by a Wexford woman. Tanya Turner is here to tell us all about a piece of technology that she hopes is going to change her life. It's not an iPad or an iPhone that we all seem to be banging on about. We're going to hear a little bit more about that in a bit. Good to see you. Thanks a million for coming in.
Same here. Thanks a million, Catherine.
So listen, before we hear your story, tell us a bit about yourself. I called you a Wexford woman, but you actually started life in London City.
I did start life in London. my dad's from England,
yeah,
which I didn't tell that many people in rural Ireland growing up. But I'm proud of you, Dad. And my mum's from Czech Republic.
Okay.
So I sometimes tell people I'm half English, half Czech, and 100%
Irish. 100%
Irish.
Yeah. So how did they end up in Wexford?
Well, it was actually moving here to get a house because it was just much easier to live here at the time.
Okay.
Like just house prices wise, really, coming from London.
I'd imagine, of course, of course.
So they found a nice little nook in the southeast of Ireland.
Okay, so you grew up in Wexford, idyllic childhood. And then in terms of work, I'm right in saying you've been a teacher. You're training for another career as well,
yes,
is that correct?
I was teaching English for quite a while. I studied languages in Trinity College, French, Russian and a bit of Polish. I just love languages. And luckily I had Czech from when I was a baby. So it helps for the love of that, you know, and makes it easier to learn new languages as well. I'm training to be a counsellor now. My ultimate dream for quite a while, before I was amputated and now after as well, a dance therapist eventually with people who have disabilities, because I just think everything's possible.
And did you always love dance?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I did Irish dancing between the age of about 8 and 10.
Okay.
To cycle to the hall and do the dancing with my sister. I did ballroom dancing in college.
Wow.
On the side. I absolutely loved it. And then I did salsa dancing as well.
Okay. So dance is a huge passion of yours.
Yeah. It's one of those moments where you think, what's the universe doing? That it's, you know, when it does that thing of, okay, now you're going to have an amputation. So find a new way to deal with it.
Okay. Well, let's go back. So take me back. It's February 2008. Mm. You're in your early 20s. You're working in Dublin.
Yeah.
You're on your bike, going about your day as everybody does.
Absolutely. Yeah. I was driving from Drumcondra into the city centre, going into work. And I think there was a van parked a bit out.
You were cycling.
Exactly. Yeah. I was cycling. And I mean, that's dangerous at the best of times. But I just swerved and I fell off my bike and I hit my knee and I thought I'd just sprained it. So not having that many sick days, I just went into work.
Okay.
And limped around until one of my friends was on my break, said, "You look awful, like you have to go to A&E." And so she went in with me. And yeah, it was actually it's my first boyfriend. The boyfriend at the time, it's his mom who went into the A&E with me.
Okay.
And yeah, she was a huge support. But the x-ray that they did came back with a tumour. So a really big tumour in my knee, actually. And I had no idea. I had had pains in my legs, but I thought it was from all the dancing and lots of sport and like sort of activity in that.
Oh my God, so you're literally in thinking you've twisted or you have a sprain and then this comes back. Like what goes through your head?
Absolutely.
One, you were probably still in shock from falling off the bike to some degree. And then this?
Yeah, I mean, what I was thinking originally was, I mean, I was just thinking, I need to get back to work, you know, hopefully it'll heal in a couple of weeks. And I mean, I wasn't at all focused. And then it was my first x-ray of my life. So then when they said it's a tumour, I was just sort of, what? You know, come again. I had no idea, you know.
Okay.
Complete shock.
So what did they say had to happen at that point in terms of tumour, like, is the first thing you think cancer?
Yeah, and actually then I suppose the first thing they had to do really was they actually wrapped me like a mummy and my whole leg was in a cast, you know, kind of. It was actually Valentine's Day in February. That was I don't remember the exact dates now when all of it happened, but I remember meeting my boyfriend for lunch with a giant cast around my leg. It was not the best look.
I can't imagine.
It looked like a half mummy.
So what you had already booked a holiday and this was, they said to you, okay Tanya, we're going to need to operate on this. What did that operation involve?
Basically they wanted to take out the tumour, so it's called curettage, I think. I don't want any doctor to comment on that, but it's scraping out of the tumour, out of the bone. And I think they would put a few pins in to kind of keep it all together after they take out what's there.
Okay, but they didn't seem too concerned at the time. It was in one place. It was, and they just, it was in the bone?
Exactly,
on the bone?
It was in the bone, in the knee. And the thing was that they actually said, they did the test on it and everything before I went, and they said it's what they thought was a giant cell tumour, but staying in the one place and not cancerous.
Okay.
So
you were booked to go on holiday. Off you went and
yeah, I was pretty stubborn about it. I was just like, I booked this to go to Paris. I never get to go on holidays most of the time. I'm going. And they said, well, as long as you don't do anything stupid like skiing. I said, like, I don't know how to ski. Why would I? But I went to Paris. My friend lives on the third floor. I came down to the courtyard and it was raining and I slipped on a piece of plastic and broke my leg in two places. So that wasn't really in the plan. So then I was in a cast for even longer, like a few more months, and then they did the operation.
Okay. So I did
something stupid, yeah.
Oh dear. So what was recovery like then? After you're dealing with a break, and you're dealing with this huge operation in terms of trying to get in and get this, and mentally you're dealing with all of it as well,
big time. I mean, I suppose at the time I would imagine I was slightly in denial, hence the fact I went on holiday as well. Like, I was just thinking I need to get this in and see my friends, and it is
sort of denial, because
it is.
So anybody listening there would be like, how could you even go on holiday? How could you be in a place where you could go on holiday when you've just been told this?
I know. I would say I'm quite different now to what I was at the time. I think it's a way where you really have to learn a lot of self-care.
Yes.
At the time, my priority was really like, you know, I know it's not cancerous. Can we do it after I come back? I can't even put myself in that mindset right now, actually.
Mm. I get it, though, because if you have to sit at home with all of this worry and self-doubt continually going on in your head, where you get out, you're busy.
You're
in Paris. I mean, okay, nobody wants to fall
on top
of that. But I understand kind of running away from it.
It is really that. Yeah, and it's a lot to do with, I think, I mean, you just want to kind of not sit at home, as you say. And I think they knew that it was going to be in about a month, the operation anyway.
Anyway,
I was only going for about a week, so.
Okay. Yeah. So by 2009, you'd made a good recovery.
Absolutely.
Everything seemed fine.
Yeah.
All the results came back clear.
Yeah.
So you moved to Prague.
I did.
For work.
Yeah, I have some friends and family there, and as I speak the language. So it was really nice to go back and do some English teaching and salsa dancing, which I took up again.
And did you have full mobility?
I did
then?
At the time, yeah, because I had done a lot of physio, about half a year of just rebending the knee and everything just to get back in. And yeah, I mean, I love travel. So I just went off and tried to start a new life. I say tried because after 6 months, the tumor came back again.
In the same leg.
But it came actually in the femur, so above the knee this time.
Okay.
And I found it because I was in salsa and it started to be painful, and I said, right, I have to get this checked. So I was a little bit more careful now to actually, you know, check it out.
Okay. And what then goes through your mind? You know, if you've had something like that, do you always think that the chance of it coming back is there?
Yeah.
You live with that.
Well, I suppose what I do now, I mean, this is obviously jumping way far ahead, but as I am now, I live in the present most of the time, as in I'm alive, I'm well, you know, I'm not going to keep thinking, is it going to come back?
Sure.
And also, I feel like having gone through it, I'm actually less scared of it. It's
yes.
a funny thing.
Yeah.
And I think people who have gone through cancer often maybe say that.
Yeah.
It's just that thing of, well, the worst has happened and I got through it stronger, you know.
Okay.
So at the time, I knew that that was wrong, that the feeling was wrong and it would probably come back.
Yeah. Okay. So then what happened? Did you come home?
So I came
operation?
Home to Ireland and actually had the x-ray, and they wanted to do a treatment that would kind of stop the tumour.
And were you with the same team of oncologists?
Yes,
and all that again?
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay.
And the same surgeon and wonderful people. But like, yeah, they actually did a treatment for a year to try and see would it actually stop it. And it didn't work at the time. It just wasn't working with my body. So after that, 2010, they did an operation again.
Okay. And what did that involve?
I'm going to take a little sip of water. Sorry, Catherine.
Absolutely. So we're 2010. And can I ask you, Tanya, what age were you?
So when I actually fell off the bike in 2008, I was 23. So 23, 24, 25 now in 2010.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay. So they and did the operation.
So they did an operation, which was this time was to replace the knee and the femur. So it's actually like, you know, people get knee replacements.
Yeah.
Usually sort of when you're older. When I was in the hospital, like the people there were saying, what are you doing here? Like at your age. And honestly, like I didn't, you know, I was on my birthday as well. I definitely didn't really want to be there, but it had to be done. And I thought that was it then, you know, they'd taken it all out. But they analysed the cells and found them to be cancerous this time. That they were actually changing and getting aggressive. So they did 6 months of chemo to follow that.
Wow.
And that was a big shocker. Like,
yeah.
That was just that moment of, oh, you know, I'm going to lose all my hair. That's kind of your first thing. And then what else is going to happen to me?
Sure.
You know?
So, sure.
But I got through that, like the 6 months. And I have to mention here, because apart from amazing family and friends, I have quite a big family. I have 3 sisters and 2 brothers and 8 nieces and nephews.
Okay. Who's outside there?
There's my
you?
Sister Teresa.
Yeah.
She came up from Galway just now. I'm really chuffed. So they were a huge support. My mum, Alice, who I live with, and my stepdad, Ivor. I mean, I'm so lucky to have that, to be at home with that. And
you realise how lucky you are when you're yes. in need and when you're going through something like that.
Oh,
to have
huge.
Family who support you is
amazing.
Vital.
Yeah, I feel like all of us siblings get on and we're really close, you know, we always call each other if we're not there. So that was a really big thing. And then I was able to stay at home, but also the Cancer Support Centre in Enniscorthy, they're called the Hope Cancer Support Centre.
Yeah.
And I just love them. So I just wanted to mention them because they're wonderful women. They're all voluntary and just, I couldn't have gotten through all that without them. You go in there like sick as a dog and they give you a blanket and a whatever you want, you know, a cup of tea and just somewhere to cry even or sit and be sick, you know, just it was okay, you know.
And how did chemo affect you?
Oh.
Because it affects people in so many different ways.
I'm sure. I mean, I had a very large dose, as far as I know, a very strong dose because I was young and could take it. And they really wanted to be sure it wouldn't come back at that time. And I mean, I remember December I started, I went home for Christmas and it was on the Christmas meal, like I was getting so sick. I was like, this is typical. I love food and it was horrible. I was actually just, you get very nauseous all the time and exhausted. At one point I couldn't really stand up on myself. You get mouth ulcers and yeah, you lose your hair and get very, very thin and just exhausted all the time, yeah.
And then to keep you on the right track and to keep you mentally strong and positive. Mm. As you said, you had a great network around you.
Yeah.
You had a great team of people around you. But, you know, that wobble that people talk about, you know, going, feeling that sense of hopelessness.
Yeah.
Because it was in your leg, was that, and I don't even know how to ask this question, like in terms of the doctors and your team of people, there's better places to get cancer than others.
Yeah.
And that is the most crass way of saying it. But do you know what I mean?
I know what you're saying.
Like, was the prognosis of...
Yeah. You mean the fact that it was in the leg might have been at least a bit better than if it was in the chest?
Yes.
Or absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, the fact that it wasn't moving any higher up than the leg, it was great news.
And were they able to say that it was not in your lymph nodes?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay.
It wasn't going anywhere else, thankfully, you know. And as I say, they had done the operation and this was just really to really prevent it coming back, you know, and to give it a real push away.
Okay.
You know, so, and I mean, yeah, it kept it away for quite a long time after that, in fairness. And once I got through all of the treatment, yeah, I mean, I was flying for a while. The only problem was that my leg then spine was straight. I didn't have enough physio. I was too exhausted during the chemo. So my leg, just all the scar tissue just ended up knotting together, and my knee just wouldn't bend more than 30 degrees for the next like 8 years.
Okay. Yeah. So how many stitches did you...
About 50.
50 stitches all up your leg.
It's about a meter long. And I kind of enjoyed evil, sometimes humor with kids, and they would say, "What happened at the swimming pool?" I'm like, "A crocodile." Oh. And then I correct it quickly when their parents come over. But yeah, you have to find the fun in everything.
I get that sense from you that humour was probably a very important part.
Do you know, I can
from
actually
the beginning of this journey for
very
you.
Very much. And my mum has kind of got black humour. We kind of understand that together. All of our family do. And I've always been that way. One of my best friends, I think she's saying, like, you know, step aside, Sinead O'Connor, like, good luck with the bald head. It suits you. And there's all these kind of, yeah, there's all these many moments.
And you've got to embrace it. And I think when people know you and know your sense of humour, yeah, it's easier because you find that even some people, when you did get sick, didn't know how to be around you,
absolutely,
didn't know how to kind of approach you?
I've met that reaction many times, and even more so now since the amputation. I mean, when people don't know you, they sometimes pity you or they don't know how to react. And to be honest, like, as I know, and from my other friends who've been sick in different ways, they say, laugh about it. It's much less awkward. Like, can we just put it out there? You know, I'd say something like, I'm going to be a flamingo for Halloween. I don't know. I haven't decided how to do that yet. You know, and people, you know, when people are trying to be PC and you're like, no, laugh. It's okay. It's okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I even remember actually that same friend who was like at the chemo time. She's like, do you know what? I'm so depressed with my schoolwork. I'm going to go back in to see Tanya in the hospital and have a laugh. Like, yes. Genuinely.
Yeah,
because
yeah,
that was...
Yeah.
So, and that was true.
That's brilliant.
It doesn't mean I was a laugh a minute through it. Of course, you know, it was horrible. Like, there were days when you're so depressed.
Of course.
And there's not to make light of that. You know, but that's got me through big time. Yeah, good. Humor is a huge thing. Yeah.
So you had that operation, and clearly because you've talked about the amputation as well, clearly... It wasn't the fix-all.
Absolutely not.
Solution.
But and did stay away for, as I say, about 7 years. Now, my maths isn't very good, but it brought us up to 2017. So let's say about that. I did have pain in my leg, but the cancer didn't come back until the all clear was at 5 years. They always give you the all clear and send you off.
You don't need to do
any more x-rays. But I was coming back for leg x-rays because of the replacement of my knee.
Yeah.
So they had to check that. So what it was I went home to Ireland. I was working in Prague again in 2017. Came home for a check, like an x-ray of my leg, and they said, your hip is crumbling away this time. Okay. So it was sore, all right, but I had so much pain by then, I didn't really think it was unusual. I thought it was just overexertion again. And they said, no, it's crumbling away, we're going to do a biopsy. There is a tumour again.
Okay.
So it was back. It's very unusual, but it did come back.
And in all of that time, had you thought about amputation? Had it been mentioned to you? Had you Dr. Googled it, as we all
Funnily enough, I Dr. Googled chemo. It was a really bad idea at the beginning,
Jesus,
as well. Oh,
yeah,
no, really
yeah,
bad.
Yeah.
Don't do it, kids. But it basically, like, when I heard about amputation, the first time I fell off the bike, actually, he said, if we hadn't caught this in time, you would have been amputated. I wonder if that stayed in my psyche until a long time later. And somehow, when it came to that point, even though it was a huge shock, like major shock, and me going, please find another way rather than losing my leg, I kind of was ready.
Okay.
In another way. It was strange. I'd had so much pain for years.
And what struck me when I read your piece was exactly that moment when the doctor said to you, we are going to have to amputate. And you said, no, like, is there any other way? And he said, well, it's your life or your limb.
Exactly. She, it was the oncologist, and she basically just said, like, kind of sadly, because I'm sure she's seen worse many times, she said, no, this isn't the worst case. You know, it's if you actually didn't have the choice, you know, then you'd be, if it was in your lymph nodes. But it's not. So in a way, it's your life or your leg, and you have that.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and honestly,
but it's such a huge, I mean, to
it's major.
Major.
Yeah.
To lose your leg. And how long did you have to process that before the operation? Because obviously they want to operate as soon as
pretty
possible.
Pretty soon. But thankfully, because again, I think they were telling me, you know, we can take the month, you know, again, at this time. Now, you know, they were saying they had actually removed it with, because I had an operation as soon as they came back to replace the hip. And again, you know, they were trying to save the whole leg. So then they just said, well, now we can amputate, but you do have a month before it has to be done.
So what do you do? What?
I went to Croatia and travelled around Montenegro and Croatia for a month.
You are a woman after my own heart. Love it.
I just, you know, at the time I had wanted to do it for ages. I went around and it was my boyfriend at the time. I just said, look, let's go. And we went off and had a lovely trip.
And in all that, when you're hiking and you're trekking and you're walking and you're in
he was doing boy, most of the hiking. I was okay. I was not pushing myself, no.
Okay, so you were
I was in pain, yeah.
But was it throughout that trip, were you going, I'm not going to be able to do that. I'm not going to be able to do this. Or were you going, like...
Well, funnily enough, as I say... It wasn't as hard as someone who's had a really, you know, flawlessly active life until then. I had been in pain for almost 10 years, basically.
Okay.
And I was able to do things, but I was limited by so much, you know, and I hadn't had a normal hiking or a normal dancing experience in a very long time. So I left him to do the hard things. And I just knew that, yeah, it would be harder coming from there, but it's funny to explain. I suppose I was nearly relieved after the amputation, like even though I was in shock and it was horrendous, but I was relieved that the cancer was gone and I could get on with my life now.
Okay.
Like that.
Can I just bring you back to that time and that moment when you woke up and your leg's not there? Because you hear and you read different stories about the phantom pains that people have and what was it like looking down at your body with... Without your leg.
It's horrible.
No matter how much
put it any other way.
You prepare yourself for it, I doubt that there's anything that kind of gets over that first initial.
No, it's a horrible feeling. It's like you feel like you're not the same person anymore and your body is so completely different. Like, how do I learn to love this again? You know, there's no way of really describing it. You're scared to go and look in the mirror now, you know, at that moment. I mean, it's all wrapped up. It doesn't matter. Your leg's gone. It honestly looked like it was photoshopped out. Like, that was my weird impression because my hip is gone, but like it was so kind of clean. Like, they did a really good job. It looked like it was just photoshopped out, but my brain took a long time to catch up and my body did too. So I had months of phantom pain as well.
Okay.
And actually, that's one of the things that I'd love to do in the end is to help people who are going through that, because I felt very lost at the time and I'd love to have like a peer group, something that we could set up that would help people there.
And just try and describe what phantom pain is. It's pain in your leg that's not there.
So the pain is actually in the nerves that have been severed. I'm sorry for anyone. This is a horrible description, but basically it feels like your leg's being squashed.
Okay.
Like all the time, like electric shocks going through it. Everybody's different, but for me it was like that. Like it's being, I can't say, this is horrible, mangled. And you don't know how to stop it.
Okay.
And I had to take very, very strong painkillers for about a month just to try and sleep and eat. And after a while, I didn't like the fuzziness of that. So I said to find another way, and relaxation. I mean, it sounds like a cliche, but meditation, counselling, relaxation, any way I could find that would just help me out of it. Mm.
Talk to me about being fitted for your first prosthetic.
So that was, it's weird. It was exciting and scary at the same time. It was about 6 weeks after the amputation. My mum was with me as well. And she said it looked like I would become like a statue. You know, those ones that don't, like, it's like the torso, because they'd put the plaster cast all around me and I had to sit very straight. And I said, like, if we could have took pictures, we would have. But it was so cool. And then they made a plaster cast of that. And that was a socket then would be made from that. Yeah, and then I came in December and they had the leg ready to go. But it was terrifying because it looked like a bucket. I was going to wear a bucket from then on with a leg attached, and I was like, goodbye being a woman.
Really?
That's what it felt like. But then
I
got to
put it on for the first time and you're walking around. And like, obviously you've got to spend weeks and weeks getting used to it.
Well, actually I spent about a week learning to walk, but a couple of weeks maybe, you know, and then you come back again and again, you know, throughout the following months. But you can do a lot at home actually with crutches as well.
Okay.
But I think the woman who's teaching me to walk, again, just so lovely. And she just said, it's a really normal reaction, but then you get this is only a test leg, and then you get your normal leg, and I got to pick colours for it. So I have butterflies going all the way up.
Oh,
it's purple
do.
With butterflies.
It's got quite a cool design going down.
Yeah. I mean,
the lower part of the leg.
Yeah. I mean, I had to kind of make it look pretty. Now, it's deceptive because it's a very clunky, hard leg to use. This is why I'm here, basically. One of the reasons that I'm publicizing myself to the world, which I wouldn't have done before. I was kind of nearly hiding away after that. I'm a very sociable person, but to actually put myself out there, you get to a certain point of learning with the leg. I mean, I did it for a year and a half. I could feel the limitations. I could feel that, you know, the knee is not controlled at all. It can fall forward if I don't take care where I step. I've fallen down a few times.
Sure.
So it's well scraped up.
So you have found a new improved leg Absolutely. That you want to go and get?
Yes.
Tell me about it.
Hi, I'm very excited because I actually discovered this. Now, it's amazing. I have to say, the internet gets all sorts of slagging, and yes, of course, but there are other ways it can be amazing. And that's for me. And this, like, I could find people that inspired me from the very beginning, like amputee models, you know, who had the same as me and were just proud to stand on one leg. And so these people now are using this leg and they can do hiking, you know, they can walk without looking at their feet, which for me would be just... A huge step. It makes sense
that in the last number of years, the technology with prosthetics just keeps improving and improving.
Absolutely.
So how much is this leg and what do you need to do to raise the money for it?
Now, the reason now that it's actually so hard to find and expensive, this particular kind of leg, is because this hip amputation is so rare. I think it's like a tiny percentage of the world that has this. Now, they've started developing more in America, unfortunately, after the Iraq-Afghanistan wars, because of young men needing this a better leg, and they actually now have a running leg for the hip, which didn't exist until about a year ago. So the thing with the new leg, it's called a 3D helix hip and a C-leg knee, and it's from Ottobock, which is the company that make prosthetics. And what it is it actually has sensors in the knee. It has to be charged like a mobile phone. So after 2 days of activity, I have to charge myself. I'm looking forward to that, just chilling out with my charger. But then also the hip is much more like a human hip, so you can swivel and everything. So I have
you can dance.
This is it. And I have to mention, this is my neighbours here down up in Rathnure, and they organised a fundraising dance for me last week. And they have a dance there anyway every week, but they did this and they raised like over 3,000 for me for my leg, and I am just blown away by how kind people are.
You have a GoFundMe page.
I do.
How much is your target to raise?
I'm just going to say Bernadette and Paddy Doolin and Marie Raleigh, because they organise it. So thank you so much. Sorry. And the GoFundMe page is, if anyone can put into Google Tanya's new left leg.
Tanya's new left leg, yeah.
I have a little weight.
What's your target?
My target is 33,000 or a little bit over if possible.
Okay.
And that's how much.
And with your medical card, how much do the government come on board and help you?
Yes, absolutely. Actually, it's 56,000 to begin with. So they take off nearly about 23,000 that the medical card pay.
Okay.
So I'm left with the 33 then.
You deserve this. You deserve to dance again.
Thank you so much.
We're going to put the link on our webpage as well for anybody who wants to donate. And I have to ask you this before I let you go. Do you feel like a woman again?
I absolutely. Thank you for asking that, Catherine, because it is such an important thing. I do. And I genuinely have learned to just, I'd say, love my body the way it is. I know it sounds corny, but I genuinely do.
That has taken a long journey to get you to say that, and it's very clear for me that that is the case.
And more than I did when I was younger. That's the irony of it. So
You're an inspiration.
And I just hope I can help other people in the same way eventually. I would love that.
Lots of texts coming in. I can relate to Tanya going on holidays. When I was diagnosed with cancer, I was training for a marathon at the time. And the first thing I asked was, can I do the Dublin Marathon before surgery? This was back in 2015. Yeah. And I have done every single one of them since. I'm now training for the Dublin Marathon in October. Keep on going, Tanya. And that comes in from Joe in Dublin.
Thank you, Joe.
What a brave, funny lady. I've worked almost 20 years with people with serious disability and I've always believed in the power of humour and laughter. Lovely to hear someone endorse that. All the best for the future.
Thank you
so much.
Says
Chris. Tanya is delightful and inspirational. What a voice of positivity. That comes in from Deirdre. Listening to Tanya on the radio just now, I've watched her going through so much over the past few years, and I can truly say I haven't met anyone in my career who has touched and inspired me so much. Lots of love and let the dance continue.
Thank you so much.
What a fabulous text. That comes in from Bernie in Gorey.
I wonder, do I know her?
Listen, what a great story. And you know, humor is so important when you're going through what you're going through and when you keep fighting for what you want and what you need.
And to remember that if you feel bad, it's also okay. Just reach out to someone and just tell them.
It's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much,
Catherine. Best of luck with everything. And I'll be keeping an eye on this.
Thank you so much.
Back after this.
All the best.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Welcome back. Keep your texts coming in to 51551 and your emails to ray@rte.ie. How lovely was that lady, Tanya? Such an inspirational story of hope and humour. And I just really enjoyed that chat with her. Irish singer Shebeal is now in studio with me. How are you doing?
Great, thank you.
Good to see you. So your self-titled album, Shebeal, is out tomorrow.
Yeah.
So how are the nerves?
I feel really really excited, a little bit nervous.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I'm really excited to see like how people respond. I mean, I feel like this has been a really, really long time coming. I've spent 3 years on this. So yeah, I'm really excited to see how people kind of, I don't know, which tracks they gravitate to and which ones people can relate to and all that kind of stuff. So very excited.
Very excited. Okay, well, let's hear one of those tracks. First one you're going to do is this First Time Ever I Saw Your Face.
Yeah.
Take it away. Absolutely beautiful. That is Siobhan, and she will be joining us again a little later in the show. We'll take a quick break.
The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Thanks a million, Michael. We were asking at the top of the show because it's been a big talking point all day about CCTV cameras in creches, and there's been a big reaction. So we've just tried to get a cross-section of some of it for you. Catherine, has anyone thought of the impact of CCTV on staff? The sector is already having a staffing crisis. I can't imagine anyone wanting to be watched all day at work. Absolutely not. No to CCTV cameras. I have a toddler in the creche and I trust the work they do and how much they care for my daughter. CCTV would make me paranoid and even more obsessed. Then Anne-Marie says, the difference between having CCTV at schools and creches is that older children can communicate, whereas babies and toddlers cannot. They have no voice as such. Having just recently returned to work after 18 years as a full-time mom, I am really struggling with leaving my toddler with virtual strangers. I would very much welcome the introduction of CCTV. Catherine, I think cameras are the way to go in creches because you're monitored everywhere you go. As you said yourself, you like to go out shopping, but you are being watched going up and down the aisles. When you go to a shopping centre, you're monitored as soon as you arrive. So why not in creches? Children's safety is paramount, and anything that can enhance that should be mandatory. And that comes in from Tom. Joe says, Catherine, I work in a preschool. We don't have CCTV. I don't think it's right under the data protection that parents would have access to view all the children on camera. Fine to view your own child or children. Also, as a worker, I wouldn't like to be under surveillance. I think TUSLA should employ more inspectors and have more spot checks, especially in places that are not compliant. Catherine, I wouldn't care who watches my children once it made them safe. Passwords for the cameras can be changed every day to help prevent problems. Children's safety first. And that comes in from Stephen, and lots more on that besides. But let's take a quick break.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, a musical comedy is in the Olympia Theatre this month, and we have three of the stars of the show. They've just breezed into studio with me here. And let me just say, I would definitely swipe right. You are looking mighty fine,
thank you so much.
Emer, Aisling and Rachel, you're very welcome to the studio. So give us the plug. When is the show on?
So the show is August 20th to 24th. It's on in the Olympia. And we're doing a show every night, and then we've got two shows on the Saturday.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So everything going well, comfortable in rehearsals?
Yeah, we're starting Tuesday for rehearsals. We have 2 weeks rehearsals this time. Yeah, we're looking forward to it.
So have you guys done, because it's toured in the UK?
Yes.
Yeah.
So we did it in the, not in the Olympia, in the Tivoli, before they pulled it down, before Christmas. We did like 5 weeks and we took a break, obviously, and then we went to the UK with it. But Rachel was doing a Shakespeare play, so we had Lindsay Co-op playing Kaz. And then the original cast now is back together for the Olympia.
Yay. Okay. Okay, so Aisling, give us the rundown. Tinder the Musical. Is it exactly what it says on the tin?
It is. Tinder the Musical. Basically, it's about friendship. Mm-hmm. So the main storyline, what grabs people, I find, about the musical is the friendship between the three friends.
Okay.
So you've got Maz, Kaz, and I play Shaz.
Right, Maz. Kaz and Shaz,
that's it.
You'll have to ask her for the Tinder terms. That's
all right.
So we're basically friends in school. So what happens is the show opens and we've just been celebrating Kaz's upcoming wedding.
Right.
So we've been out for a hen night and we're trying to convince Marion to go on Maz to go on Tinder. And in the midst of all that, we discover Kaz's fiancé is on Tinder.
Yeah. Oh, the dirty rogue.
Explodes from
that's
there.
That's not uncommon, I hear.
Exactly.
Yeah. I hear.
People can relate to it, I
think. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, God, so you find the little swine on Tinder and then... Yeah. So can we reveal what happens after that? Like, are you
There's a standoff between me and Kaz.
The story kind of takes a bit of a turn.
So we just have to go and see
it. There's a breakdown in friendship.
And then we all end up on Tinder at the same time because obviously Kaz is heartbroken, right?
Big so competition
decides,
then.
I'm going to find another man, you know? And then Maz, Shaz and Kaz are all on Tinder at the same time. So they're kind of all... Well, Maz kind of wouldn't be in the same league as fellas as you guys. You know, like she
horse
kind
Lito.
Of... She ends up with a horse Lito hidden.
and you get to see the images of the things of the men on the screen at the back because there's like... And they have the lyrics for the songs and stuff as well. So
and
you can see what we're seeing.
It sounds like it's a bit of crack. Yeah. And you know the way Daniel Day-Lewis, he goes into into method acting.
Or deep into the world of Tinder.
Yeah, so did you have to go deep in... Well, can I ask at this point, which of you are single? Okay.
I'm single.
Eimear, you're single.
I've experienced Tinder before.
Okay. And so you were a Tinder user?
Yeah, for like 20 minutes. And then I was like, I'm dying alone.
She played with mine during rehearsals one time. And
oh, we all did. It's the best.
To play with someone else's.
I love doing that.
But then I swiped right with this guy who was quite attractive, but it was a very busy time for me. Like, I was obviously
so she ghosted him.
No, I didn't ghost him. I said I'm working on something and it's really busy. I'm really busy. Can you give me a couple of days? And he said, yeah, but it was a week. I was working on that and I was working on another show with Westside Performing Arts. And then I literally, as soon as opening night opened, I decided, right, I'm going to send him a text and I opened, or I send him a message and I opened Tinder and he had deleted me because I hadn't messaged him in like 2 days.
You
really
see, here's the thing with Tinder for me, right? Because there was Operation Transformation and there was a leader on it last year, Siobhan O'Brien, who is just mega and she's brilliant, and she had just lost the will to live having been on Tinder. She was single and her friends, herself and her best friend, and they were like, no, it's done, I'm over, I'm sick of the disgusting photographs, I'm sick of people not messaging me back, like, why do you send me a message and then not respond when I send you one back? So what has been your experience of Tinder, and when the audience come to see this, is it very much like a girl crew night out? Is it just women going, this is it, God, I'm over it?
Well, like, we've had a couple of people who have met on Tinder. So they come to Tinder on a date and they're able to relate to meet each other. And then we have had like the crews of women. It's really funny. We had, I don't know if you remember it, there was like a student night and there was a lot of kind of younger people in the audience.
Oh my God, do you remember this night? Yeah, yeah.
And they were all really like afraid to laugh.
Be quiet.
Yeah. But like the older audience is like break their hearts laughing. Yeah. So I think the people younger, it's too close to the bone. For
them. It's too real.
They
see themselves up
there.
Aisling, had you dabbled in the old dating apps before you met your partner?
No, never. So I'm with my partner a long, long time. So when I opened the script, I honestly, some of the terms I didn't know.
Like what?
Yeah, like ghosting, like when a fella just disappears. Breadcrumbing, when a fella leaves a tiny trail of DMs or Instagram likes just to keep you interested.
Breadcrumbing.
There's a zombieing, when a fella just reappears into your life, haven't previously ghosted you. Or there's cushioning, which is kind of just...
I forgot that one. What's cushioning?
It's basically just like keeping people sweet. Like it's
purposely breadcrumbing someone to keep
like a backup
them there
plan, isn't
case.
It?
Yeah, it's like
a backup plan.
But there's a new one. It's gentle ghosting.
Oh,
yeah, right.
Gentle
ghosting is basically you plan on ghosting someone, but you breadcrumb them. Oh. You kind of wean yourself away.
Oh, you wean them off. I'm confused. I'm confused and I'm just hungry now. And Rachel, what about you? You did Tinder.
Yeah. For like 20 minutes.
Did you have any dating disasters, like any big ones?
I made friends in it, and that was my main thing in New Zealand when I moved away.
The two of them are just looking at each other.
That's all I wanted to do.
Lads do that. It's so annoying. Like, I didn't join them to be a pen pal.
But I told them. I literally was just like, oh, look, I'm from Ireland and I just want to make some friends. So can we just be... And I actually still have a friend from it. So,
any males listening who are on Tinder, please don't do that.
Tinder, please don't do that.
Not
this,
we're not.
But what would you say, Eimear, like, what are the online dating do's and don'ts then? I mean, all of this, because women are, we're quite savvy, obviously, now to how...
Give your height. I've had experiences of friends who have gone on dates and their date is much, much shorter than them.
Like, that sort of stuff doesn't bother me. Like,
well, I've had girls who are just like, no, I can't. My friend, she's like 6 foot and she was like, he never gave me his height. And when he stood up at the table, she said, I nearly died. And she had worn her heels and she was looking amazing. She was glamazon like, and she said, I nearly died.
But you see, you could look, the argument of that is because now with filters and girls wearing makeup and getting her hair done and doing the whole thing, and
they
take
look nothing
6,000
like
photographs
it.
Of yourself until you get like the nicest one and the best angle, and then you walk in and they're clearly like, oh,
you don't look like
that's
that.
That's called kitten fishing. So catfishing is when you pretend to be someone totally different.
Eimear, you need to do a master's degree.
I listened to a podcast last week called Private Education, and there was about 10 more terms, and I was like, oh, I better do a bit of studying.
Sorry, like,
catfishing is when you pretend you're someone completely different. Kitten fishing is when you gently Photoshop, or you lie about something small, like you lie about your height, or you filter something, or you put something else in. So it's kind of like only a small lie, as opposed to like a complete. Like, I am not
a different person.
So you can flare out all the lines and make the hair bigger.
Yeah. Do you know I need to know this.
I think in Ireland, being single has changed a little bit. My sister lives in the States. She lives in California. Okay. She lives in Los Angeles, where nobody cares. Nobody asks what age you are. Nobody asks if you're married. Yeah. Nobody asks if you have children.
Yeah.
And I think here, I think people are a little, we're changing. We're not there.
Yeah.
But certainly, I think people are a bit more aware now that relationships happen maybe a little bit later. Yeah. And they're
true.
A bit more,
well, I mean, and that's one thing for me, and I hate to say it, but like, you know, if I'm looking in, age is probably the first thing I check in a profile. I want someone either the same age as me or older. And but that being said, like sometimes when you meet someone and if they're younger than you and you get on with them, it doesn't matter. But I think in the age where you can order, not order or pick and choose, you know, like that you go. Yeah. Or if same with like age would be one thing, or like some people just, you may not ask things about people, but people disclose so much by their photographs, like on their profiles. Like if someone's holding a gun in a photograph, I don't know about it.
Yeah.
Or and even some people have a dog. I love dogs, I love animals, but some of the lads look like they've literally just gone off the street, taken a puppy, taken a bit. Yeah, great, tick the box.
Or if it's a gym pic, it's like a selfie gym pic of a man, you know, when you were talking about
swiping right, your friend swiped right for you. My sister's friend swiped right for her friend, and she is in a fabulous relationship now.
Wow.
Yeah, and when I was having I was having an argument with Siobhan from Operation Transformation. I was in her kitchen, and she was just like, "No, no, no." I was like, "Yeah, you can't even see them. Like, I can't even see. Did he have a mustache or did he not? Like, you swiped right so quick."
That's what I was saying to you. You need to go in and have a look and read their thing. And people look different in their.
No, so you're looking for pen pals. I'm looking for friends. You get it,
I'm looking for friends everywhere.
I'm a light over here. You need to invest. No. Jessica Fletcher on a Tinder profile over there.
Have you ever fought, Aisling, over a guy with a friend? Because I know that's part of the show. That's a theme in the show.
God. No, actually, I don't think so. That's never happened to me, unless we were talking like senior infants buzz.
Okay.
I might have gotten someone in a headlock about someone in senior infants, but never as an adult. No, actually never as an adult. And like, the audience are quite reactive about this. They can be quite reactive about other women.
Yes.
You know, if one's being nasty towards the other, you will
get
it.
That's true.
Oh.
And they actually will say it, though. They'll call you out on it.
Do you know what someone did to me one time? I was talking to your researcher this morning. They were chatting away, and I fancied this guy years ago, right? We were probably about 15, and I said it to my mates. I was like, "Oh yeah, I fancy." I won't say his name. Let's call him Paul, right?
Okay,
his name.
And they don't know. And so I said, "I kind of fancy him." And my mate was like, "Okay," and I was like, "Will you suss him out?" Because it was all that, like, ask your mate to be, you know, whatever. And she went, like another friend of ours went and said to Paul, in inverted commas, "Emer likes you, but so does." Such and such. Which one basically do you want to be? I only found out about this like a couple of years later.
Oh no, who would do that?
We don't hang out anymore. Like, obviously, I smelt it without actually knowing. But yeah, I can't believe people. Like, if that happened in the show, our audience would go mental.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Mm. Like.
And Rachel, you lived in New Zealand. I'm right in saying that. So, what is the dating culture different there than here?
No, it's pretty similar. Yeah.
And Tinder is big there. I mean,
I used to go on dates with my friend. To accompany her on her Tinder days because she wouldn't go
with me. What is with you and the friend?
Oh my God. Like,
no, this guy, right, was like a millionaire and had a swimming pool. And she was like, "You can come and you can swim in the pool. Please come with me." So we could have gotten married.
So sorry. Whoa. Now, what was his Tinder profile?
He was standing in front of his mansion
and she went,
he was only house sitting
in the air.
he was renting Airbnb.
So go on, what happened? So she matches with him.
And I was at the pool just enjoying life in New Zealand. Yeah.
It's like some sort of bouncer.
Yeah, but then I ended up, she didn't get on with him at all. And then he was showing us the house and I was like, "Are they your children?" He was like, "Yeah, we haven't gotten divorced yet, but we're going through." And I was just like, "Okay, right." I was like, "We need to go."
There's a lot of that. Like, even on Tinder, you'd have a profile where it was like, "I'm not going to show my face because I'm married looking for a bit of fun."
Why? Or I had a friend, he went on a date and he got there and it was a couple and he was like, sorry. And
she was obviously like...
It was a husband and wife. And then the husband got offended that he didn't want to... Because he was like, "What's wrong with my wife?" And he was like, "Oh no, there's nothing wrong with her. She's lovely, but I just didn't realise she wasn't single."
I mean, there are just... There are endless stories.
I have a good story though where a friend was... Was good.
I'd say you have more than one or two good stories.
Buckle up, everybody.
They were friends for 5 years.
Right.
She's actually doing costume. It's Christina. She's doing costume in Coppers at the Olympia at the minute.
Oh, and that is meant to be brilliant. I'm dying to see that
as well.
We're
having good fun. We're having good fun. But she was good friends with them for 5 years and they matched on Tinder and pretended they did. They were like, oh, you're very cute. And he was like, oh, you're very cute. And pretend. And then he's like, so do you want to go for a drink? And they're 2.5 years together.
Oh,
that's a good story.
Because that does, because it does have Ireland being so small. Like,
oh,
we're such a small
country.
Definitely
know, and you're going to ask people. You can be like,
you're going to see people on Tinder that you know.
Yeah. So Tinder can be like the friend going, go on.
Go on.
If you link your Tinder to your Facebook, technically it's not meant to show you anybody that you're friends with.
It always shows
you don't match with your mates.
But it shows mutual. When I was on a years ago.
Yeah, whatever the algorithm is now, it's that so you don't match with your mates.
You know what, ladies? We're going to take this to the canteen upstairs. We'll keep it going. Remind me again that the Tinder the Musical, it's taking place in the Olympia Tuesday the 20th to Saturday the 24th.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And tickets are available now. It sounds like a right out hoot. I am going to be there. Thank you very much for coming in to have a chat.
Thanks,
Siobhan is back in studio. Looking slightly nervous and terrified after that conversation.
It's okay, Rachel, just want to be friends. I just want to be friends, it's fine.
So as we said, Siobhan, your album is coming out and you were telling me there during the break after the last song. So it's been 3 years in the making. Explain why that is, because you started it when you were doing your Leaving Cert.
Yeah, so I started when I was doing my Leaving Cert and it's actually with Universal Music.
Okay.
And so I started when I was doing my Leaving Cert, but then I had to kind of put a pin in it for a while because I had to do my exams. And then I took a year out, so then I did some extra tracks because I kept kind of revisiting what kind of tracks I wanted on it and the kind of music I wanted, because it is a wide range of music and styles. And finally, this year, it's I feel like it's really come together nicely and I feel like everything's just right on it. And yeah, I'm really excited for people to hear it.
I think where people really remember you, you sang Misha Era. It was for the 1916 centenary. Big show. Yeah, do you remember? The girls are like, oh, yeah. Like, that was your moment to shine. That was an incredible moment for you. That was, it was a big live TV show.
Was it
nerve-wracking? Or?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like every single concert since then hasn't been as nerve-wracking as that one. I could do anything now and not be as terrified as I was that day.
What a privilege to get that opportunity to do that.
And also singing Padraig Pearse's words in his poem, like, you know, it was really, really an amazing night and an amazing year as well, because Misha Era really, like, did sort of take off and I got to sing it, like, to so many different people and in lots of different places. And it is actually on the album, just there for whoever wants to listen
you're
to
gonna,
it.
You're going to sing us out with Manon Aherne, another incredible tune. Yeah. So sit back, ladies, buckle up, and over to you, Siobhan.
Thank you.
Is more than no. Shin tilt to ban yaden snyar fairly bow mishag lame noch no luck again his mo. There is a woman, if you walked with her, would give you gold. A wise woman who'd rather listen to my. So stare of the shooting lane. Go on, on, on,
absolutely stunning. And Siobhan is playing Flak Eol in Louth on August 17th and August 31st. She is in the National Concert Hall. This has just come in. Can you please tell Siobhan her version of Misha Era at the 1916 commemoration still makes me cry to this day. I'm a 47-year-old ex-rugby playing 18 stone, 6'2" bloke. It's outstanding and I hope she has continued success and all the best for the future. That comes in from Daz. That is all from us today. Thank you to everyone for taking part in the show. Mary Wilson is next on Drive Time and I'll be back tomorrow.
Thank you so much.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1 with All Care Pharmacy. Expert advice on hay fever for welcome relief. At All Care, the largest Irish-owned pharmacy brand.